We are going to start with Genesis chapter 32, verses 22 through 31. Jacob got up during the night, took his two wives, his two women servants, and his 11 sons, and crossed the Jabbok River's shallow water. He took them and everything that belonged to him, and he helped them cross the river. But Jacob stayed apart by himself, and a man wrestled with him until dawn broke. When the man saw that he couldn't defeat Jacob, he grabbed Jacob's thigh and tore a muscle in Jacob's thigh as he wrestled with him. The man said, "Let me go, because the dawn is breaking." But Jacob said, "I won't let you go until you bless me." He said to Jacob, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then he said, "Your name won't be Jacob anymore, but Israel, because you struggle with God and with men and won." Jacob also asked and said, "Tell me your name." But he said, "Why do you ask for my name?" And he blessed Jacob there. Jacob named the place Peniel, because I've seen God face to face and my life has been saved. The sun rose as Jacob passed Peniel, limping because of his thigh. The second reading comes from Matthew chapter 14, verses 13 through 21. When Jesus heard about John, he withdrew in a boat to a deserted place by himself. When the crowds learned this, they followed him on foot from the cities. When Jesus arrived and saw a large crowd, he had compassion for them and healed those who were sick. That evening, his disciples came and said to him, "This is an isolated place and it's getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go into the villages and buy food for themselves." But Jesus said to them, "There's no need to send them away. You give them something to eat." They replied, "We have nothing here except 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. He said, "Bring them here to me." He ordered the crowds to sit down on the grass. He took the 5 loaves of bread and the 2 fish, looked up to heaven, blessed them, and broke the loaves apart and gave them to his disciples. Then the disciples gave them to the crowds. Everyone ate until they were full, and they filled 12 baskets with the leftovers. About 5,000 men, plus women and children, had eaten.
So this is a map of, this is the area in which all of this story that is taking place in Jacob's life is happening. And what I want you all to notice is that the story is actually a multi-generational story. And way over here on the right-hand side of the screen, if you have your gallery view on, you may not be able to see it, but just in case, is Ur of the Chaldees. Ur of the Chaldees is where Abraham, grandfather of Jacob, was first given the call from God of a covenant that would come his way, in which he would be blessed with a child, and that the child, that he would become the father of multiple generations, the descendants of which would be as numerous as the dust. They would have their own land, and they would have a place in which they would be a light unto the nations. And Abraham begins his journey to this promised land, and he follows this path, this red path, all the way up to this place of Haran. And in Haran, he sojourns there for many a year before he finally, following this red path, works his way down into this area, which is right inside this white box here. And for those of you that are on the phone, what I'm circling is what we now know as the area of Israel, known as Canaan back then. And this is the promised land. Abraham will continue to be in, his journeys will take him into Egypt and back to the promised land, where he will then have a son, Isaac. Isaac will spend his entire life right here in the promised land. And then Isaac will have a child, 2 children, Esau and Jacob. All of this happening in this little box right here. This is the area where Bethel is. This is the area in which we heard about Jacob having a dream. What is important to note is that it is from Ur of Chaldees to Haran is 600 miles. This is not roads that are driven. These are roads that are carried or caravaned over. And from Haran back to Canaan is another 400 miles. It is here in this white box that is the promised land. All this other area is not. So let me get rid of that now and stop share. And I share all that with you because it becomes an important part of the story. Because the truth of the matter is, and let me just do one thing real quick so that I am able to see my notes here. The truth of the matter is that Jacob's story, as we know it, is a story that begins at a time in which Jacob, as a young man, decides that there is something that his father has that he's going to give to his brother, and Jacob will do whatever it is that he can in order to get this which he wants. Jacob's life begins, as we know it in the biblical story, as a life that is filled with cunning and filled with thievery. And so it is that he finds a way to trick his father, to trick his brother into getting the bereka, the blessing that comes from father to oldest son, which comes with its stature and comes with its wealth. And he will do whatever it is that he can to take care of himself. And that is what he does, I'm sure, envisioning a life of wealth and a life of leisure, only to discover that actions have consequences. And the consequence that he discovers right away, that his brother Esau is not happy. And his brother Esau is faster and stronger than him. And Jacob has no choice but to flee from where is his home, where is the seat of all those blessings that had been promised from Abraham to Isaac and to him now. It is time that he needs to flee. And so he flees. And just a handful of miles away is where he comes to that place called Bethel, where he has a vision that we talked about just a couple of weeks ago, that vision of a staircase that goes up and down from heaven to earth, and where God speaks to him, speaks to this thief, to this con man, and says, you will be the father of the nation that has been promised to Isaac and been promised to Jacob. You will be the one from whom all the descendants more numerous than the dust shall come out. You will be the one that will be the father of the nation that will be a light unto the world. And for any of us, if we ever feel that we are unworthy of God's love, unworthy of God's presence, Jacob's story should be our story, should be one in which we recognize that if Jacob can be the one that God will bestow this amazing blessing, this blessing that becomes the foundation of the entire biblical story, if it is Jacob that God can trust, then God can trust us, can entrust us with all of God's love, with all of God's presence. For if Jacob is capable, so too are we. What we discover is Jacob at this moment, though, is not capable. A person that has a strong moral background, as you might think Jacob might have, having just had this blessing from God, this most amazing blessing from God, would at this moment recognize the mistake that he has made in the last few days, and there at Bethel, turn himself around and go to make amends with his brother and with his father. But in Jacob's story, that is not what happens. And in our own stories, for many of us, we receive these amazing blessings that come from God. And sometimes we recognize them, but sometimes we are not able to live into those blessings in the ways that we wish we could. There are too many things that pull us in too many different directions to live that life that we know that is right and pono. And so we too run from those blessings as Jacob does now. And Jacob begins or continues that flight away from the promised land, that flight away from his family, from his father, and from his brother Esau, and he heads north. And where does he go? Where does he go after this first few days as he makes his way 400 miles north up to Haran, up to the very place where grandfather Abraham was, and grandfather Abraham had sojourned for a while and finally said, this is not where God has called me to be, and has turned and gone south. Jacob is reversing those entire steps and running further and further away from those blessings, way up there north to Haran. And there in Haran, Jacob falls in love. And we know the story of Jacob. He falls in love with Rachel, who has her sister Leah. Rachel and Leah happen to be the daughters of one who is his equal in cunning and deceivery, their father Laban. And he agrees to labor for Laban for 7 years in exchange for being able to marry Rachel. But at the last minute, Laban substitutes Leah for Rachel, and he ends up sleeping with Leah. And all of a sudden now, Laban says, well, you know, this is the way it is in our country. So now you owe me 7 more years since you've had Leah, and if you want to have Rachel. So now it's 14 years that he has now been tricked into spending a life there with Laban and Leah and Rachel, and by the way, with their maids Zilpah and Bilpah. And for good measure, another 6 years is added on. So now here we are, 400 miles north of where all those blessings that God had promised would come to be. 20 years later, after his moment of thievery and cunning has come to, and something happens. Something happens in the mind, in the spirit, in the presence of Jacob at that moment, and he begins and he recognizes that this life that he is living is no longer tolerable. When he recognizes that the life that he might have envisioned 20 years before when he stole that blessing has not panned out in the way in which he thought it would pan out. Instead, here he is 400 miles away from home, and here he is trapped in the clutches of one more cunning than himself, his father-in-law. Even if he has lived a life of comfort, even if it has created a life of convenience, it is not the right life. It is not the life that he knows God offered when God created that blessing and gave it to him. And there comes a point now in Jacob's life where he says, no more, no more. I can no longer accept that. We all have these own moments in our own life. I have shared with you my own moment when I was in my mid-20s, when there was a time in which life seemed to be going good in terms of relationships, where I was living, the work that I was doing, and yet there was an emptiness within myself. There was an emptiness within myself, and I knew that that emptiness was because there was a hole that I had created that could only be filled by the presence and the love of God, and I had slapped a door on that hole. Because I was afraid that if I let God in, just exactly what my life would be. And there came a point where, like Jacob, where he looks at his life and says, this is a life that is not tenable, not tolerable for me anymore. There came a point in my own life, as I know has happened for many of you, where you say, I cannot go on anymore like I'm doing. And so finally, there was a time where I said, I will open that door and I will allow God in. And if what that means, and what I was most afraid of, is that when God, I allowed God in, where God was going to send me, I was going to be that guy in Waikiki Beach holding up a yellow thing, telling people that they were all sinners and hitting them over the head with the Bible. That's what I was afraid of. And I realized that my fear had gotten the hold of me. And because of that, there was this great hole, and I had to open the door and allow God's love to come in. So it is with many of us. We don't know what it's going to be like when we make those turns. Jacob had no idea what his life would be when he said no to Laban, no to the life that he now had. But the truth of the matter is, he had come to a point after 20 years where he could go on no more. This is a metanoia moment, that word that we have talked about before, that Greek word that means a transformation from a life that is going one direction and becomes turned upside down and goes to another direction, the direction that God has called us to. It is not at all unlike the moment that the prodigal son has in the story that Jesus tells many years later after this moment in Jacob's life. Where that young man, having squandered everything that he has more or less stolen from his father and from his brother, comes to the recognition that says, this is not a life that is acceptable anymore. I must return. And so Jacob comes to that realization, comes to a Jacob moment in which he realizes that the life he is living is not one that is any longer acceptable. And he must turn around and he must return to the blessing. And I wonder because I know that we have these Jacob moments in our individual lives. Do we also have these Jacob moments in our community lives, in our national lives? I wonder if we are not right now, in this moment in our nation's life, having a Jacob moment. Have we come to that moment when we realize that the structures that emerged from 1619, structures that had to be built so as to justify the enslavement of people, systems that had to be created so as to allow the utterly spurious division of people by pigmentation so that some might prevail while others suffer. Have we come to that national moment that isn't about saying racism is bad? We all know that. Why else would even the most racist people in our culture lean on arguments and cries of reverse racism? It's not that we've come to a moment in which we recognize that racism is bad. Have we come to that national moment that we recognize that we can no longer live with the fact that the very structures and the systems that exist create not only preferential options for some, but disproportionate struggle for others? Are we as a nation at a Jacob moment when we recognize that the way in which we have lived, what is so built into our fabric that it has become normative, must give way to a new norm? Are we not at a moment where we, like Jacob, understand that the only way forward is to turn around and return to where the true blessings of life exist? Is now not a time for us, like Jacob, to grab all that we are, turn around, no matter the fact that the way that we have been living may have, for some of us, given us comfort, given us security? It is not where the true blessed life, the true home life, is to be found. And so Jacob, uncertain of the future that is in front of him, only certain of the fact that the present is no longer acceptable, Jacob packs up his household and he heads south. He heads south from Haran, following now the footsteps of grandfather Abraham, who in Haran had turned south as well, and he turns south to work his way to the promised land once again. And truth of the matter is, if this story were a Disney movie, we would be just about at the end of the story right now. Birds would be chirping, butterflies would be fluttering by, frogs would be turning into princesses. We would be awash in wealth and beauty, because in that Disney world, all that is necessary is for someone to make the right decision once, and then all the pieces will quickly tumble into place. But this is not. This is not a Disney movie, and nor is our life right now a Disney movie. Laban in Haran is not happy, and Laban gives chase. And if we decide that this is our Jacob moment as a nation, and we determine to turn our back on the systems and structures that have become normative so as to create that life that we know should be right for everybody else, the truth of the matter is that way of life that we have had will follow us, will tempt us, just in the same way that Jesus was tempted in the desert there for 40 days and 40 nights. Those temptations will come to us, that way of life will come to us in the still of the night, and it will say to us, oh, really? Is this really what you want? Do you really want this new life? Do you really want to turn away from the life that you have had? Was it really all that bad? You're really a good person in heart, those temptations will say. You don't need to support those structures. We can work away. We can nibble at the edges, change them just a little. What harm is there with just a little bit of privilege? Look at the protests in your streets right now. Is that really what you want? Look at the anger on the faces of some folks. Is that really what you want? It doesn't have to be that way. Those voices are going to call to us. Just come back. We'll work to change things out just a little bit. Jacob, when Laban finally catches up to him hundreds of miles after chasing him, before he has gotten back to the promised land, does the very same thing. Those things that we turn away from will follow us. They will want to hold on to us. Jacob, Laban says, Jacob, these are my daughters. These are my grandchildren. Do you really want to take them away? Just come on back. No, Laban. Come on, Jacob, we can work this out. Come on. No, Laban. come on, Jacob, it wasn't that bad. I mean, life wasn't all that bad. I'll give you just a little bit more. I understand you're a little upset. Just come on back. No, Laban, no, no. And so Jacob says no to Laban and keeps going on his journey south. Jacob's spirit and ours are set in a direction that we know to be right. The promise so close, but it is not yet here. For our scriptures, as Meredith has shared with us, have one more nighttime event for Jacob to go through, a wrestling match with a heavenly figure. Scholars have looked at this. Is this God? Is this an angel? We don't know. Truth of the matter is, Jacob has been in a wrestling match for a very long time, probably for about 20 years. And his wrestle is our very own wrestle, wrestling with that which we know which is right, but irreconcilable with the way in which we have been living and what we have been doing at times. It is Paul's lament that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Why is it that all the things that I know I shouldn't do is what I do, and what I know I should do is not what I do? And what he learns, what we know as well, in this moment on that night, there on the shores of the river Jabbok, what he learns and what we know is that God does not promise that when you make the right choice that all things will fall into pieces. Instead, what God promises is that life will indeed have struggles. Life will indeed have uncertainties. Life will indeed have questions, and God will be present with you in that struggle. The promise is not that you make the right turn and all things will become hunky-dory and wonderful and loving. The promise is instead that in the midst of all of that, in the midst of that struggle, God will in fact be there present with you right in the midst of that wrestling. So waking from that wrestling match, Jacob knows an electionary will not take us to this story. And so I'm going to take us there because it's the best and most important part of Jacob's story. Waking from the wrestling match, Jacob knows what he must do. Remember that little white box in the map that I pointed out? That little white box, which is the promised land, which is Canaan. The river Jabbok is right on the edge of that promise, of that white box. To cross over, you cannot get into the promised land without crossing over the river Jabbok. But even when you have crossed over the river Jabbok, you are not yet in the promised land, because now you are in the land of Edom. And Edom is where his brother Esau has been for the last 20 years. And for all Jacob knows, Edom has been the place where Esau has been nursing a grudge and building his strength for the last 20 years. But Jacob knows that if he is going to fulfill those blessings that God has given to him, if he is going to return to the promised land, he must first cross the river Jabbok, and he must cross the river Jabbok, and he must cross into Edom, and there he must confront his original sin, the betrayal of his father, and the betrayal of Eden. And he has no idea. He has no idea whether he will survive that moment. Yet the truth of the matter is, there is no turning back. When we come to that place in our life and we know exactly what the right thing is and we set ourselves upon that path, there is no guarantee. There is no guarantee that all the right results will follow. Ask 23-year-old John Lewis and hundreds of others beaten and savaged as they attempted to cross a different river millennium later, the Alabama River, March 7th, 1965, en route from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama, by way of the Edmund Pettus Bridge. En route to demanding that the very ideals of a nation be equally applied to all. Just because bones were broken and blood was spilled did not guarantee at all that laws would be changed. Yet the only way to that potential blessing John Lewis and the others knew was to cross that river, be come what may. And so it is that Jacob crosses the Jabbok River, knowing that he can go no further until he has faced his brother, determined to do that which he should have done 20 years before, but did not have the strength to do it, to admit to his wrong, to beg for forgiveness, just like the story of the prodigal son. And it would not surprise us at all if Esau, cut off from this blessing with a grudge nursed for 20 years, is ready to take Jacob's head and cut it right off. Jacob knows this, yet perhaps the most essential thing of those metanoia moments is our ability to admit the wrongs of our previous way, come what may, of whatever the consequences will be. And there it is that he encounters Esau. And what does Esau do? Esau runs to meet him and embraces him and falls on his neck and kisses him, and they weep. Amazing grace. Amazing grace. How sweet the sound. As author Shannon Alder says, you will face your greatest opposition when you are closest to your biggest miracle. This is the promise that awaits us if we but seize this Jacob moment in our shared lives. We can make for a different world. We have seen it happen. Last Sunday, while we were preparing for a hurricane, John Lewis crossed the Edmund Pettus Bridge one more time, this time in a casket. Having lived a life that refused to let the batons and the dogs, the rage and the ire of that long ago day carry the day. Congresswoman Terry Sewell last Sunday said John was determined to fight for equality and justice, putting his own life on the line in the service of others and a brighter future for everyone. John crossed bridges so many times, insisting that our nation live up to the ideals upon which it was founded. And as John Lewis's casket moved across that very bridge where he had once been brutally turned back, people in the crowd, people of all colors, instead of jeering and spitting as they had done in 1965, shouted, "Thank you, John. Thank you, John Lewis. Thank you for the good trouble. Thank you." John Lewis, like Jacob before him, had entered the promised land. For Jacob, it was indeed a place of embodied soil that he finally enters into. But so, like so many others, it was more than just that. It was an emboldened soul that now entered into that promised land. Shall this be our journey as well? That is the question that is before us this day, really every day. And so it is that, you know, on a day like today, we will find ourselves in front of a communion table. My communion table happens to be my desk right here. And there I have on it the elements of the table. I have the bread. I have the wine. And I will find myself here in front of this table. And I will hear again, as you all will, the story of that table. And we will hear again that for the disciples, this must have felt like just another day. But it's not just another day, when the day is the day in which you are going to make a choice to live a life that is pono and right, that is filled with the blessings that God has given to us. That is the choice that it took Jacob 20 years to make. And even as an older man, he would continue to struggle with that choice. His story will continue to be one in which he will stumble and fall, but always there is that blessing that will of God's presence in the midst of struggle, that wrestle that is with him at all times and all questions, that would be there. And so it is for us. When we come to the table like the disciples, this is not just any day. This may well be the day in which our life is going to turn around. We are going to have a metanoia moment, in which we are going to embrace that call that God has given to us as individuals, as a community, as nations, as a world, a call to embody love, a call to dismantle all the things that get in the way of that love. And so it is that Jesus gives us a way. On the night in which he was betrayed, he took bread. He took bread and he broke it. He said, "This is my body, which has been broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. To do this in remembrance of him is to be as Jacob was, as John Lewis does, as so many others, to be willing to give of our lives, to take the risk of giving our lives so that others might have life. And so ministering in his name, I offer to you now to take the bread that you have at your own place, to break off a piece. If you're there with others, to share it with others and say, this is Christ's body broken for me, broken for you, broken for us. Let us eat. And he poured into that cup. He said, this is the blood of the new covenant. That new covenant is a new covenant that is defined by love. Remember me as well. When you take of this cup, live into that new covenant. So let us indeed partake of that cup and give of ourselves to that covenant of love. Amen. Let us listen to our communion hymn.
One Lord of all, one God.